Hi, I'm Charlene. I'm an addict. I feel absolutely terrified. I'm really scared. I didn't realise it was this big, Roz, really. Yeah. And that's okay. It's all right to feel scared. And my head was going, just cry and they'll love you. Just cry and they'll love you. Just cry straight away. And the last time that I come to this meeting, I think it was about a year ago. And I mean, I was 3 years clean and I went out for 2 days. And I was sitting outside on the stairs in the other building and I was out there and I was really tearful, I was crying. I really thought, you know, I've had my chance. I ain't going to get clean again. I remember Paul come outside and just spoke to me for a little bit and I felt a bit better. And, you know, I really thought that, you know, you only get one chance at staying clean, and if you mess up, then and that's it. And, you know, I went out for 2 days, but I felt more hopeless then than I did when I come into NA. And, you know, I was on the train there, and I heard two men speaking, and one of the men went, you know, if the worst comes to the worst, we'll go down the road and have a couple of pints. And I thought, yeah, that's exactly what I held on to. You know, if it gets really bad, I can have a drink. Yeah, no biggie. And, you know, it did get painful and stuff, and I went and had a drink, and it was the same as it always was. And the reason I come into it, I picked up my first drug when I was 9 years old. My mum was an addict, and I didn't know my dad. I picked up alcohol, and I liked the way it made me feel. I was always quite fearful. Started puffing about 13, and I started on speed, and then I found cocaine, and I always said I wanted to go out of a drug dealer. And I did. I got together with a drug dealer at about 16, and you know, I always say, it's like just me, him and the Rockweiler, and we'd just sit in this room and play on the decks and stuff. I had my own personal DJ, and you know, I used to just basically just beg for drugs in the end. It seemed like at first, you know, it's fun, and with a drug dealer I'm getting it, you know, when I want it. And what ended up was, like, I ended up like 6 stone, not very attractive, like a psycho woman, and I'd be like, oh please, just give me a stone. And he'd be like, no, you're not having it. I say, oh please, and then I'll go. And then he'd give me a stone, I'd go in the toilet and smoke it on my own. I was always so frightened that someone would want a bit. And then I'd smoke it, and then I'd come downstairs, and then I'd go, I don't want to go home now, please don't make me go. And I'd stand there pleading with him, please, please, I love you, I love you. And that's really degrading, you know, like, when I look at it that way. And you know, and if he was really angry with me and chucked me out, my reality was that I'd just go down to the local saloon. That's what it's like. You know, I'm surprised that when you walk in the doors, there ain't that, like, a cowboy tune and that. And they've got a bar and they call it the zoo bar. You know what I mean? And I was in that bar, and I drank and used with, like, a lot older people. And I always see them as, you know, there's like armed robbers and stuff like that. And I look back now and they're just, you know, they're just sick people. And I think I needed to imagine that to believe that I was in a glorious kind of lifestyle. And I was a young girl and, you know, when I come into this program, it was like, you know, I weren't a working girl and all that. But if he had some Charlie on him and all that, you know, it was like, yeah, I'm yours. That's basically the way it was. And it took me a long time to admit that. Like, I was quite grandiose when I come in here, you know. But that's the way it was. And I was 18, and the majority of the people I were hanging around with were like, you know, middle-aged people. My friends didn't want anything to do with me, really. Because they weren't like me. They knew when to stop. And I can't stop, whether it be alcohol, whether it be puff, whether it be crack, coke, anything. When I start, I just, you know, my auntie amazes me. She has a drink and then she goes, oh, I have a coffee. It's like, fucking hell. You know, I never could do that. And it was always, you know, the party ain't going to stop. I need to carry on. And basically, you know, something that I was really ashamed of as well. It was like my mum, I resented her a lot when I come into this fellowship. I smoked crack with my mum, and when she was, she had cirrhosis of the liver, and I was so absorbed with, you know, using and stuff like that, that I encouraged my mum to like sniff cocaine when she's yellow jaundice and spewing up blood. And, you know, it was just, it was just about me, really, because I knew that if I give her some, then she'd probably give me some money because she'd want more. And that was the kind of relationship that I had with her. And my mum died through the illness, and I just carried on using. And I had a little brother who I really love, and he's in prison at the moment. And I always felt the need to look after him like his mum. And at that time, I believe that he really needed me and stuff like that. But, you know, I didn't get up to the hospital to see my mum for 2 weeks that she was in there. I was too busy in my flat with three guys that I didn't know smoking crack. And I totally weren't there for my brother at all. But, you know, what I've learnt in this programme and through the 3 years that I was around, that I need to forgive myself for things, you know. I went for a long time being clean and really not forgiving myself. And when I come to the understanding that, you know, it's an illness and I would have done whatever it took to get my drugs, and when I take them, it controls everything. I have no choices anymore. I have to do what it says do, no matter how degrading it is. And, you know, it's something that I had a harsh lesson to learn. Anyway, so she died, and basically the end of my story kind of is like, you know, just lying on the sofa. A psychiatrist coming round, called Parry Ante, and he used to have a big cigar and all that. And I used to say, you know, you just have to help me. I'm not well, I'm mental and stuff like that. And they put me into a psychiatric unit, and I got kicked out because I got the other patients smoking puff. And, you know, and I think I was searching for science then. But when they told me that I was a drug addict and an alcoholic, I just, you know, no way. I'm not like my mum. And my family said to me, we don't want you coming round no more, you know, because we can't stand seeing what you're doing to yourself. And, you know, towards the end, I weren't a happy addict. I was always crying. You know, I was such a rat. You know, watching myself now, it was kind of, it's really lonely. You know, I was like 21, riding about on a mountain bike with a baseball cap, 6 stone in a pair of Adidas leggings, like the tight ones. And I thought I looked really great and stuff like that. And people... people were crossing the road from me, like people even tell me now, you know, we didn't want to say hello to you. And even now I think, well, fuck you, you know, I don't talk to you either. Didn't you know I was sick? Yeah, cunt. I still don't like anyone telling me anything about myself. I remember my auntie the other day in the kitchen, who I now have a really lovely relationship, you know, she's giving me door keys and all that. I'm allowed in the house now. And she said, you know, Charlene, you couldn't have gone any lower. Thanks, man. I'm like that. I still don't like it. Anyway, what happened to me was that I think I got into recovery by accident, really, because I'd spent my cousin's money, and the boyfriend was ringing up at the time seeing where I was, and I did not say to myself, I'm going to go and use today, you know. There was a lot of times that were like that. I'm not going to use today. I'm just going to go for a wander in the park. And I bumped into a couple of people that were smoking crack. And I thought, oh, I'll just stay for 5 minutes because the conversation was so great. I'll just stay and sit with them. And within 10 minutes, I was at the top of the park smoking crack with them and spent my cousin's money. I was always quite frightened of her, actually, at all. But when I take crack, I'm invincible. I don't give a fuck. Fuck the money and stuff like that. But when I come down, I start to get scared. And she's ringing me up for her money. And on this one day, I couldn't lie. I don't know what happened. Probably a spiritual experience. what happened was she rung me up and... I said, I've left your door keys underneath the mat. I'm going home. She went, no, you won't. You'll get round here now, like that. So anyway, I had to go round there, and I just opened the door and I went, I'm a crackhead. I've been smoking this and I've spent your money and I'm sorry. And I think I was doing it to try and get her to feel sorry for me and stuff like that. But she fucking knew a Salvation Army person that managed to get a detox number. So it was almost like, oh no, I've got to go through with it now. And yeah, fucking hell. So lies can help sometimes. And so she rang the Samaritans, and I went in to City Roads, and a wonderful place. And I always felt like I was alone. I was the only person that done things that I'd done. And when I walked in there, I met three wonderful women, and they were addicts. And what happened, I always say this, you know, when I cried, they give me a cuddle. When I shared about things that I'd done and stuff like that, they identified with me. I went in there with a pair of boots with holes in the bottoms I'd nicked from Asda's, and you know, one girl gave me a tracksuit, and I remember it. It's like, it only sounds like a tracksuit, but it was like a pucker tracksuit, and I felt really good in it. And all I kept thinking was, yeah, I'm going to show them, I'm going to put on some weight, and my boobs are going to get big, and I'm going to show them and stuff like that. Because it was always about other people. They were the enemy. And anyway, I went to my first NA meeting, and there was a woman up there, and she shared about, you know, shameful things that she'd done, and secretly identified. And I kept going back to the meetings, you know, I got a sponsor, I started working to the steps to the best of my ability. But what I tended to do in this program, I used the step fours and stuff to beat the shit out of myself and say, look at what a bad person I was, and not actually what a sick person I was. And I'd go along and I'd do chairs and I'd help newcomers, but inside I was thinking, you know, I'm really bad. And you know, when I relapsed, I believe that I came to believe I had a big problem with that. It's like, oh, look at where God works in your life. I'm going, yeah, yeah, hallelujah. I even said hallelujah in a meeting once. You know, let's really get into this. I was good at drama as well at school. And what happened was that when I relapsed, I took myself away from everyone. I thought, right, I'll go to the Isle of Wight. There's people there that are in the program. I'll keep myself safe and I'll do some step work. I know how to stay clean. And I remember sitting by this beach, and I just thought, that's it, I'm fucked. I'm not going to get clean again. And I rang a wonderful woman in this fellowship called Layla, because I was too frightened to ring like one of my best mates, Roz, because I thought she was going to judge me and not want to speak to me because I'd used it. And she said, don't be silly, Charlene, Roz loves you. And I was like, ooh, it's emotional. Yeah, yeah. And she spoke to me, and then I rung Roz, and I kept speaking to people, and then I come back home, and I kept going to meetings, and I come to believe, because, you know, I thought in here that it was conditional. I had to do these chairs, I had to help other people, all the stuff that I suppose most of my life, you know, you will be loved, but there's conditions, you've got to do something. And what I realised was that it doesn't matter in Narcotics Anonymous. They're going to love me, and they're going to love me, and until that I can love myself. And that was when it was like, yeah, you know, now I believe. And it weren't like something that I could write down. It was a feeling that I felt. And, you know, I'm really grateful for that, for people that took the time to just come and speak to me, you know, phone me. And they say about the newcomer, this girl, right, who I tried to help, right, she's trying to help her, don't want me help, right. But I really look at her now, and I have so much, you know, I really love her, because she don't seem to get more than 30 days in that, but she keeps coming back, and she keeps coming back. And now I think she's about 60 days and all that. And I was a week clean, and I'm in the Isle of Wight. She rung me up and said something really profound. She said, Charlene, keep it in the day and keep coming back. I was like, fucking hell. You know, that was like really profound, because I'd lost all that knowledge. And my sponsor, a little Irish woman, I'd ring her up and go, I want to use. She'd go, I break your fucking legs. I go, fucking hell. Fuck's sake. All right. I thought, right, I ring little old Mary, who's been clean for about 30 years. I'm sure she's got loads of wisdom. All right, Mary, I said, I feel like drinking and using. She'd go, well, don't. And put the phone down. Fuck's sake. I thought, I had to crack up. I thought, yeah. I thought, no, they're right. Don't. Keep it simple. And that kept me, yeah. I thought, now I get it. Fuck's sake. And I've got to say, you know, my life and the way that I feel about myself, you know, I'm on the journey of forgiving myself. And, you know, I've got wonderful friends. I've got a lot more self-respect than that 20-year-old hanging about in the pub and stuff. I've got a lovely home. I've got good relationships. You know, I got my feelings, which, you know, which is nice. Yeah. Good and bad, I suppose. It's nice to be a human being, to actually feel sad about things and stuff. A wonderful boyfriend is actually in the fellowship as well. That's, you know, I always ask people, and what I learned in doing my 4 and 5, my new sponsor, if I tell you who I am, you're going to get up and walk away. And I'm frightened of that because I'm all I've got. And what I'm learning in my relationships that I have in my life is that I can tell you who I am, and the people that matter and that love me don't go anywhere. They love me anyway and they stay. And that was something that I was searching all my life. I believe in the program, I believe in the steps, but ultimately none of that will work if I pick up. And the main priority is not picking up a day at a time, sometimes at a moment at a time. If there's anyone in here that's struggling with thinking, you know, they're the worst person ever, you know, what I've learned here is that, you know, just forgive yourself. You're not alone, and people can identify with you. And, you know, it's the one place that I've been that I could just be, you know, brutally honest without having a grand Charlie or something. You know, I'll tell you anything then, but when you come and it's real, I won't tell you nothing. And I just thank Narcotics Anonymous for always welcoming me back and giving me a life, and that I'm not going to end up, you know, a day at a time dead like my mum, you know. And it's not even that. It's like when I think about that, you know, oh, I could end up dead. Oh, yeah, so what? I just can't stand the way that I feel at the moment. The part that gets me about my using is that, you know, that just how much respect I lost for myself and no dignity walking around like that. I'd rather be dead, if I'm honest, than stay like that. Yeah, I'm going to leave it there, Roz. Thanks for asking me and thank you for listening.